What qualifications are required to become head of a Catholic school? What are the key challenges involved? And what kind of support can a headmaster or mistress expect from the church and from other secular sources? All those questions were at the heart of a recent meeting of the European Committee for Catholic Education, hosted by St Mary's University College just south of London, the very same venue that Pope Benedict visited during his pastoral journey to the UK in September last year.
The visit of Pope Benedict was, of course, an enormous affirmation for all of us and a reminder of our mission and role.
Una Stannard is director of the Catholic Education Service for England and Wales and was one of the principal organisers of the Pope's meeting with teachers and school children in Twickenham, a meeting that was streamed live to Catholic schools and colleges right across England, Scotland and Wales. She told me more about the challenges facing head teachers in the UK and about the lasting impact of Pope Benedict's meeting with the world of Catholic education last September.
Well, the European Committee for Catholic Education meets twice a year in various countries around Europe. And part of the meeting is the general business of exchange across all the countries. And then there is also a main theme to each meeting. And the theme is generally decided by the country hosting that General Assembly. And given how important the formation of leaders is to us here in England and Wales, we wanted that as our theme so that we could share something of what we're doing and what we're experiencing with our other European partners and glean some feedback from them as well. You know, we were looking for their advice and their response to the situation that we were describing.
Now, you talk about it as a major concern for you. Is there something of a crisis, a real shortage of head teachers for Catholic schools?
Well, I always say there's no actual shortage of people well qualified to be the leaders of Catholic schools, but there is a shortage of people willing to step up to that responsibility.
And why do you think that is?
And that means we end up re-advertising more often, for example, than other schools do. I think the reasons are very complex. Some of them are to do with the same factors as assail community schools and the secular, more secular sector. And that is that being a head teacher is an extremely arduous role, and I think we've had a period when society's almost laid the ills of anything at the door of schools, and head teachers have had to pick up that responsibility. So it's not just the Catholic sector that is suffering when it comes to finding sufficient people to become the principals and head teachers. But for us, of course, we do have rightly additional expectations of those that will lead our schools, that they must be practicing Catholics. And we're working hard to ensure that we give people who will be suitable for headship the formation opportunities and the encouragement that they need so that they will feel that they want to fulfil their vocation as a head teacher rather than, as many do, remaining as invaluable and very successful deputy heads and assistant heads.
So what kind of qualities are you looking for? You say that heads are expected to be practicing Catholics themselves, but what are the main other kind of characteristics that you're looking for?
That's a very interesting question, because one of the activities that we did during the CEC General Assembly was to have a presentation and interactive session with Geraldine Davis, who's the head of the School of Education at St Mary's University College. And she gave the delegates an opportunity to both rank various qualities that she was suggesting and also to write their own further qualities and characteristics and to rank them. And what was transpiring was that there is obviously a need to be very clear about your mission and how the role of Catholic schools is part of the church's vision, but the personal qualities and characteristics that the leader will need to fulfil that in terms of their own faith, their child-centeredness, their experience. So it's many faceted.
Do you think that the men or women are more suited to this particular role, or is it very much the same across both genders?
That's also a very interesting point, because when I was one of Her Majesty's inspectors, I had a responsibility for some research on education and gender and the glass ceiling. And I found at that time that even fairly recently qualified male teachers did what I described as talked themselves into headship. You know, they were going to become heads, whereas women tended to talk themselves out of it and were very focused on their shortcomings, other responsibilities and so on, as they saw it. I have to say, I didn't see the shortcomings. They were generally people of great merit and a wonderful investment for the future. But I go back to this fact that it is a very, very taxing job. The hours are very long, the responsibilities are pretty much 24/7. And of course, if you're the principal of a Catholic school, you are, as it were, a minister in the Catholic community. You are a Catholic leader up there, highly visible in all that you do in your professional life. And I think it can feel as though you don't really have downtime, because, of course, the sort of person we want as a Catholic head teacher is somebody who will be there in their own parish as well. So they're always within the community that they're serving pretty well. Although, of course, you get a little distance perhaps and respite if you are somebody who's living some way from your school. Then, you know, when you go to Mass, you go with the additional peace and quiet of perhaps not being surrounded by the children in your own school. But, you know, there are pros and cons to both.
But I imagine they're also dealing, as you say, in a much more high-profile way with a much broader range of moral and ethical issues than a few decades ago.
I think that's possibly so. There is no doubt that we are in a period when there are quite a few secularising forces around, although, as Archbishop Vincent Nichols was saying on Radio 4, he doesn't feel that we're part of, as it were, a victim culture, and we shouldn't think like that, and we don't think like that in terms of education. In a sense, it's because Catholic education is so successful in this country that we have the high profile that we do, and that we're participating in the debate all the time. And when we take particular actions, for example, in relation to personal, social and health education, and we say, well, yes, you know, the facts will be taught, but no, we are not going to engage in things that will promote behaviours that are not in accord with the teachings of the church, then we do get a great deal of attention for that sort of response. And indeed, fairly recently, we've published on our website a protocol to help our schools in dealing with visitors who come and work in their schools, who may be giving talks or are from other professional services. So you're right, the profile is high, but in some ways we're pleased about that, because we can show what we do and we can contribute to the debate. But it does also mean that sometimes it can feel as though we're in a firing line for a minority, but nevertheless a vociferous minority, who don't understand or support what schools with a religious character are contributing to the well-being of society as a whole.
Certainly the British media does seem to keep fueling the debate, the controversy, if you like, the accusation that faith schools are actually much more divisive than they appear to be, and that they enhance some kind of ghetto mentality.
Well, I think that has fortunately receded in the public debate recently, because I think we have just hammered home so often and so publicly robust research data that says that is simply wrong. We are not divisive. The profile in our schools is ethnically more diverse than across other schools. We live up to the meaning of the term Catholic as universal. In terms of social disadvantage, our schools are virtually akin to other community schools. And when you look at, for instance, Ofsted, the inspectorate's remarks about our schools and what they do, it shows the great deal that they do to promote community cohesion and to work with others, and many other forms of evidence which show we are not the ghettos that a small but again vociferous minority would sometimes mistakenly try to assert that we are.
We are the living in the love of God. We are the living in the love.
You were hosting the meeting in the St Mary's University College there in Twickenham, where Pope Benedict addressed students and education leaders. Tell us, if you can, perhaps something about the impact of that visit on the work that you do on Catholic education in the UK.
Well, I think the visit of Pope Benedict was, of course, an enormous affirmation for all of us and a reminder of our mission and role. And since his visit, we have been involved in what we're calling the Year of Catholic Education, a year of celebration following the visit of our Holy Father, so that schools continue to reflect on his words and reflect on their actions and get involved in new and sometimes quite special activities of celebration and reaffirmation of our living out the exhortations of the Holy Father. When, for instance, he told our school children and our students that friendship is very important, but the most important friendship of all is your friendship with God. And the Holy Father was really quite remarkable in the way in which he spoke to young people about things which are so important and current to them and at their level. He told them he understood how important it is to be popular, and celebrity can matter to a lot of people, but he brought them right back down to where it matters in their own lives. And I've had many opportunities to talk to teachers and heads in our schools, and they have been deeply moved by the papal visit. Some of them have expressed the fact that they had some anxiety before he came. They were worried, for instance, about how the media might handle it. But without exception, it was an experience of renewal, reinvigoration, and faithful energising for all those in our schools. And that's what's continuing on as the legacy at the moment.
And talking to the children themselves, I'm thinking particularly the younger children, if you had a chance to ask them what struck them most about the Holy Father, about the visit.
Well, that has been fascinating. Some of those conversations have shown how very, very well aware even quite young children are of the importance of the Holy Father, their understanding of him as our leader and our shepherd and somebody even who the very youngest acknowledge as being really, really very special. And I think a lot links in with that word Father there as well, our Holy Father. So I've yet to meet a child who hasn't been touched in some way, even though for some of them, of course, it's quite a hard concept. But I'm reminded of one little girl who said to me that she was standing next to children who got the opportunity to shake the hand of the Pope. They were outside the chapel at St Mary's in a group, and when the others shook his hand and one gave him flowers, this little girl said, "I wanted to do something special. I knew it was a special day, and I just managed to touch his sleeve." And this little girl was 8 at the time, and she's told me that story only very recently. So, you know, clearly that's living on 6-7 months later. And I think that for all those who were there and for those who participated remotely in their schools where it was live streamed, I think this is an event which will remain with them for the rest of their lives.
And for you, Una, personally, if you could just somehow summarise what that day meant for you.
Gosh, as you ask that question, my eyes fill up with tears. It was just breathtaking. I was, as you might understand, somewhat exhausted by the time the week arrived, having been responsible for many of the arrangements at St Mary's University College. And I stood in line outside the chapel to greet the Holy Father when he arrived. And I was just completely imbued with the significance of the moment in terms of the stature of, you know, our Holy Father was here with us on English soil. And when he came and shook my hand, it just completely changed into a very, very personal moment. The way that he puts both his hands around yours and the communication in his face and through his eyes, the gentleness, the compassion, it was just truly a life-changing moment, and one that I think about very often, particularly when I'm tired or things seem a bit of a struggle. It gives me the energy and reawakens my verve, as it were, to carry on. And the other thing I would say is I was very fortunate in that I heard the Pope in Westminster Hall, and I was able to attend his Mass in Westminster Cathedral. But one of the very special things that lives on is walking down the Mall in London and seeing the papal flags flying. That is a moment which will also be with me forever. That recognition in England that the Holy Father was with us as head of state and was being welcomed. It was truly, truly remarkable.
My thanks there to Una Stannard, Director of the Catholic Education Service for England and Wales.